the Texas killing fields, West Mesa, Gilgo Beach, all notoriously known as places where serial killers dump the bodies of their victims. There are few who are unaware of these terrible stories, and there are many beyond them, but there are also places that no one seems to know about, places where terrible crimes took place, and the answers continue to elude authorities. Fort Myers, Florida, a beautiful vacation destination that, while for some is a source of joy and excitement, for others is a horrifying nightmare. In early 2007, a surveyor examining a 10-acre plot of land made the grisly discovery of a human skull. Over the course of the next days, 7 more skeletons were found. Over the years, investigators have managed to solve the identities of 3 of the victims, though the other 5 remain unknown. Without their identities, the investigation is stuck, making it difficult to determine just who the killer may have been, how he selected his victims, and whether or not he is still in the area. Had police stumbled upon the dumping ground of a yet unknown serial killer, or maybe one they already did know? This is Trace Evidence, Episode 129, The Fort Myers 8. Welcome to Trace Evidence. I'm your host, Stephen Pacheco. Today we examine the truly horrifying story of 8 unsolved murders. Before getting into the case, just a few notes about the show. Trace Evidence is a weekly true crime podcast focused on unsolved murders and disappearances. You can follow the show on social media on Twitter at TraceEvPod, Instagram at TraceEvidencePod, or by searching Facebook for Trace Evidence. The show is also available on MeWe and Minds. If you're interested in supporting the show and getting some Trace Evidence merch, there's a Patreon available at patreon.com/traceevidence, or you can donate via PayPal. Visit trace-evidence.com for all social media links, donation options, and contact information. You can submit case suggestions directly through the website or email me at traceevidencepod@gmail.com. 8 men murdered over an unknown period of time by an unknown individual. 1 potential person of interest and no solid physical evidence. This is episode 129, The Fort Myers 8. Fort Myers is considered the gateway to Southwest Florida and is a hugely popular tourist attraction. White sands stretch over 7 miles of coastline, dotted with resorts, restaurants overlooking the Gulf, and countless gift shops and stores where eager vacationers spend their money to commemorate their trip. From the fishing pier to the boardwalks over the lagoons, the city sees a massive influx of travelers throughout the course of a year. Thousands flood in every year to experience the beautiful waters, exciting attractions, and of course, to get some sun. Most travelers come to the area in the summer months when resorts are booked full and travelers are advised to plan well in advance, but the city sees vacationers year-round, and many come during the winter months to trade in the cold of their local cities for warm temperatures and fun adventures. Far from the sandy beaches, busy streets, and boardwalks, there are many quiet and isolated areas which are rarely seen by locals, let alone visitors from out of state. In the early months of 2007, one of these out-of-the-way places would become the scene of a horrifying discovery, one which continues to haunt local investigators and residents alike. As you might imagine, a busy place like Fort Myers has a lot of new developments going on. Everyone's looking to cash in on the tourist business to create new businesses and attractions in hope of establishing a new revenue stream while adding to the beauty and appeal of the city. One such location being examined was Overgrown, a 10-acre lot near the end of the unpaved Arcadia Street, not far from the Eastwood Golf Course. An ecologist had been sent down the dirt road to examine the site, make determinations about the likelihood of developing new properties to replace the wooded thicket. It was meant to be the beginning of a dream project that would become the stuff of nightmares. It was the morning of Friday, March 23rd, when the property was being examined. Early on in the process, the ecologist saw something jutting out from the earth. Approaching slowly and brushing away some of the dirt revealed a grisly scene. A human skull was partially protruding from the ground. Horrified and frightened, the ecologist quickly pulled out his cell phone and made a frantic call to 911 to report the discovery of human remains. While authorities initially believed they had a single crime on their hands, that belief would quickly change as examination of the scene would reveal that this was far from an isolated incident. When investigators arrived on the scene, they were somewhat surprised to find that the skull was not buried deep in the 10-acre plot, but instead no more than 25 feet from the nearby dirt road. Very early on in the process, several police vehicles arrived on the scene as crime scene technicians from the Florida Department of Law Enforcement were called in to sift the dirt and reveal more of the body, according to the Fort Myers News Press. As crime scene technicians worked, removing the earth from around the skull, they slowly revealed more bones, eventually digging out a complete human skeleton, though it had not been buried very deep. Reports suggest that the bones were under less than 2 inches of soil, though it's unknown if this was due to whoever had placed the remains there not burying them, or if flooding had changed the topography. It was later theorized that the body had been placed on the ground, not actually buried, and that the soil had shifted over time, accounting for the few inches of cover. The body, which police estimated had been there for several years, was barren but for the bones. There were no immediate signs of trauma, nor were there any items discovered outside of the bones. No personal effects, no shreds of clothing. It was also noted that the bones showed signs that animals in the area had chewed on them, and as a result, some were scattered. Technicians were working in a wide circle, clearing dirt and debris when, much to their surprise, they discovered a second set of bones not far from the first. Before investigators could even consider the possibilities, a third set of human remains were discovered within that same tight circle. What had initially appeared to be the site of a single victim quickly began looking like a dumping ground, but investigators weren't immediately sure that they were looking at homicides. The initial theory for investigators revolved around a funeral home. In the past, there had been discoveries of bodies in vacant lots and swampy areas which had been placed there by funeral home employees who had defrauded families by charging them for cremation, but not actually conducting that cremation, instead disposing of the bodies in isolated areas. Just 5 years earlier, the Tri-State Crematory in neighboring Georgia had been involved in the illegal dumping of more than 300 bodies in several wooded locations. However, soon investigators began to theorize about the possibility that the site had been the dumping ground for perhaps a serial killer, or maybe was in some way related to the mafia. For investigators, identifying the victims would be the first major step in determining what might have happened here. Police Chief Hilton Daniels explained that only after identification would they have a better idea, telling the News Press, quote, "We have a lot of theories right now. We have not ruled out a funeral home having dumped these bodies, and we have not ruled out a serial killer. After we identify these people, we'll have a better idea." End quote. In hopes of determining what exactly they were dealing with, investigators reached out to Heather Walsh Haney, a forensic anthropologist who was teaching at the Florida Gulf Coast University. Walsh Haney would be faced with the difficult challenge of not only determining how the victims had died, but also who they might be. In regard to the causes of death, Walsh Haney explained that due to the lack of tissue and organs, the exact causes of death might be hard to determine. When asked how long she believed the remains had been there, Walsh Haney replied, quote, "In Florida, because of the humid environment, you can get to a skeleton within a few weeks," end quote. Walsh Haney was one of the first people called into the scene to assist, as crime scene technicians had already been joined by members of the medical examiner's office. It was a difficult task, to be sure. Considering the condition of the bodies being completely skeletal, there was little information given by the bones, at least in terms of causes of death. However, while it was initially believed that they had discovered only the remains of three individuals, it seemed every time the dig operation widened the circle by a few more feet, they came across something new. In total, over the course of that day's expedition, investigators discovered more than 1,600 bones connected to the full skeletons of 8 different individuals. It seemed quite apparent now that police were dealing with some kind of a dumping site, and while the funeral home theory had been considered early on, the low number of bodies and their similar sizes seemed to suggest that this was an unlikely theory. Had it been a funeral home's work, they would have expected to discover a larger variance in the body types, particularly they imagined they would find the remains of both children and adults, though in this case it seemed that all they had found were adults. Beyond that, Karen Cooper, supervisor for the Florida Department of Law Enforcement, told the media, quote, "If it was a body dump by a funeral home, they probably would have dumped them all in one place, and these are not on top of each other. They're spread around. I think we're more likely dealing with a serial killer or something of that nature," end quote. All 8 skeletons were found within a tight 50-yard radius, with each body being no more than 50 feet from another. John Douglas, the former FBI profiler, was asked about the discovery and expressed that the absence of clothing and personal effects made it more likely in his mind that the site was used by a serial killer. He went on to explain, quote, "If you're in the business of killing people, that's a great disposal area. You've got the remoteness, the elements, the heat, the insects, animal predation. You put a body out there and probably within a week or so, there's not going to be much left," end quote. In addition to Walsh Haney, a botanist and an entomologist were brought into the dig site to examine plants and insects in hopes of determining just how long the bodies had been in that location, according to the Tallahassee Democrat. When asked about the method for identifying the remains, or at least determining gender and age, Walsh Haney told the East Bay Times, quote, "There are trends that we can read in the skeleton that can tell us that a pelvis is male and the cranium is male versus female. We can also look at the nose structure, palate structure that can tell us ancestry and racial groups," end quote. It would take several months before police were able to shed any light on the victims, but on June 8th, a press conference was held to discuss what had been learned. Walsh Haney's work determined that they were dealing with 8 men, 7 of whom were confirmed to be Caucasian, while one was considered to possibly be of Hispanic origin. The age range for the victims was between 18 and 49. In general, the victims had signs that at some point they had been well nourished and taken care of, with many of the victims showing a history of good dental work. One particular victim, given the nature of his teeth and the absence of recent care, was considered likely to have lived a transient lifestyle, though it was later said that many of the victims appeared to have sustained injuries and wear throughout life, which may have suggested that at some point they had found themselves either homeless or living in difficult situations. Walsh Haney later told Wink News, quote, "Something happened in their life history to have them change direction, because that health status, their dental health, their skeletal health, was that of people who lived very hard," end quote. Investigators were facing a complicated puzzle. They now had confirmed the remains of 8 males, but they had no way to determine who they might be or how they had been killed. In hopes of finding some answers, police reached out to the public through the media, asking for anyone who had any missing persons in the area to reach out to them, with the hopes that they might be able to identify some of the victims. Some bone samples were sent to a lab operating out of Texas to extract DNA in hopes of identifying the victims, while the skulls were delivered to Sharon Long of Laramie, Wyoming. Long has degrees in both art and anthropology and has worked with the Smithsonian Institute to reconstruct faces from bone. Long was able to construct approximations of the victims' facial appearances based on the bone structure after creating rubber molds from the skulls themselves. Long explained part of the process to CBS News, saying that teeth width was used to determine lip size, the angle of the nasal cavity can help determine nose shape, and that nose shape and size also helps determine ear shape and size. Each recreation took approximately 70 hours to construct, but ultimately, Long was able to create representations for each man, which were then photographed and provided to newspapers for publication. Police received hundreds of calls from families of missing persons as a result of publishing the photos, and within days, they were working with more than 50 families in an attempt to identify the victims. By November of 2007, 8 months after the discovery, they had successfully identified two of the men. Eric Kohler, 21 years of age, missing from Port Charlotte, 30 miles to the northwest of Fort Myers, and John C. Blevins, 38, of Fort Myers. Their identities were confirmed by scientists at the University of North Texas Human Identification Center, utilizing the DNA extracted from their bones and then compared to the DNA of living relatives. Both Blevins and Kohler had last been seen in 1995, and both had criminal records. While Kohler was reported missing 4 years later, in 1999, Blevins had never officially been reported missing. Blevins' stepfather, Terry, contacted authorities a day after seeing the artist's recreations. While ultimately it was confirmed that Blevins was one of the victims, Terry himself was frustrated, telling the news press that the recreation did not resemble John that well, and he hoped for the sake of identification that the other sculptures were more accurate. According to Blevins' mother, she last spoke to her son right around the time he vanished, telling Wink News, quote, "He said I'm going to go out for a little while, and said I'll be back, and he never showed back up. It's been a decade. There's not a year that goes by that I don't think about it," end quote. Eric Kohler's mother, Carol Broderick, has expressed the pain and grief she felt after learning the fate of her son. In a discussion with the news press, Broderick stated, quote, "I'm hoping that there's an afterlife and that Eric has some peace in life, because I know deep in my heart that he must have died a horrendous death if he was there with seven other bodies," end quote. A third man was later identified, this being Jonathan Tehei. Tehei was known around Fort Myers as a drifter who had disappeared, much like Kohler and Blevins, in 1995, just days before what would have been his 26th birthday. Natalie Worthington, Tehei's half-sister, contacted authorities after learning about the Fort Myers 8. DNA provided by Worthington wasn't conclusive enough for an ID, since they were half-siblings, and both of Tehei's parents had since passed away, his mother dying just 4 months before the discovery. However, a hairbrush she had left behind still had strands of her hair in it. Soon, DNA analysis was able to confirm that Jonathan Tehei was indeed one of the Fort Myers 8. While Tehei was not officially identified until early 2008, he thus far has been the last of the men whose identities has been discovered. For investigators, that leaves five unknown victims who have yet to yield any results. And while knowing their identities would certainly assist in the investigation, based on the history of these three men, it began becoming more clear that whoever had killed the eight men had likely been in the habit of picking up or spending time with transient men, or perhaps men who were out on their own, disconnected from family and friends. Unfortunately, due to the nature of the remains being skeletal, no cause of death has ever officially been revealed by investigators, though whether or not one is suspected remains unknown. Several articles have gone on to speculate that the cause of death may be related to strangulation, as nothing has been found to connect the remains to massive physical trauma, such as stabbing or shooting. After investigators had completed their grid search of the 10-acre lot, it was announced that they had found no weapons, nor had they been able to recover any bullets or other evidence which might help illuminate the way in which the eight men had been killed. All police truly knew was that they were dealing with homicides. While there was a limitless amount of speculation about a potential killer, there was one name which kept coming up: Daniel Conahan. Conahan is a suspected serial killer who targeted men he would later sexually assault and torture. In February of 1994, the unidentified remains of a man were discovered in an isolated wooded part of Port Charlotte. A medical examiner was later able to determine that the victim was between the ages of 25 and 35, though his identity is unknown to this day. Nothing was found at the scene, no clothing or personal effects. 2 years later, in 1996, a family dog returned home with a grisly find, a human skull. Investigators flooded the area and began a grid search. More victims were discovered, totaling four. Each victim had been found nude, and at least one had had their genitals mutilated. Some of the victims had apparent rope burns from binding, and subsequently investigators searched and were able to find marks on trees, suggesting that the victims may have been tied to those trees at the time they were tortured and killed. Over the years, investigators were able to identify some of the victims who had been found, those being John William Melarango, Richard Allen Montgomery, and Kenneth Lee Smith. It became apparent quite quickly that investigators were dealing with a serial killer, and soon the case was labeled as the Hog Trail Murders. The crimes had been spread out across Charlotte and Sarasota counties, 30 minutes to the north of Fort Myers in terms of Charlotte County. Several people directed investigators to take a look at Daniel Conahan Jr., a 42-year-old unemployed nurse living in the area. According to the Orlando Sentinel, Conahan was arrested on July 5, 1996, for the kidnapping and attempted murder of Stanley Burden. According to official reports, Conahan had offered Burden money in exchange for him posing for bondage photos. Conahan led Burden into the woods, at which time he bound him to a tree and attempted to sexually assault him. Burden fought back to the best of his ability, at which time Conahan attempted to strangle Burden. After struggling with Burden, Conahan apparently got frustrated and left, leaving his victim nude and bound to a tree. After escaping, Burden contacted the police. During their investigation, police executed a search warrant on Conahan's apartment. Several items were found connecting Conahan not only to the attack on Burden, but also to the murder of Richard Allen Montgomery. A paint chip had been found near the victim, and that chip was matched to the paint of Conahan's car, as well as fibers from both Conahan's car and home being found on the victim's body. During the trial, Burden testified against Conahan, as did two undercover police officers who had posed as gay men and reported having been approached by Conahan, who propositioned them with taking nude photos in exchange for money. Ultimately, Conahan was found guilty of Montgomery's torture and murder, at which time he was sentenced to death. However, investigators believe Conahan is likely responsible for all of the Hog Trail murders. They simply don't have enough evidence to officially file charges. Of course, considering the nature of the discoveries in terms of the Fort Myers 8, investigators became extremely suspicious of the fact that while some of Conahan's alleged dumping grounds had been discovered years earlier, it was entirely possible that the 8 victims found in Fort Myers could have been directly connected. Perhaps the most intriguing detail revolved around the fact that Stanley Burden, who had managed to escape from Conahan, had been attacked less than a mile from the location where 6 years later all 8 skeletons would be found. The timeline seemed to match up with the 8 victims believed to have disappeared during the 90s, right around the time that Conahan is alleged to have been committing all of the Hog Trail murders. However, due to the inability to identify all of the victims, police have not been able to confirm exactly when they were killed. It's believed that the range could be as wide as 1987 to 2001, the latter portion of which would rule out Conahan, as he was arrested in 1996 and convicted in 1999. Fort Myers Police Detective Sergeant Jennifer Soto confirmed that investigators were trying to make a connection to Conahan, though she would not state that there was any direct connection established, telling the Statesboro Herald, quote, "We certainly can't exclude him at this point. We are very well aware of the similarities in this case. It's one avenue that we're actively pursuing," end quote. One issue which has been brought up by those who don't believe Conahan was responsible revolves around the method of disposal. In the Hog Trail murders, the killer had often posed his victims, and their remains were found spread out over 2 counties, whereas in Fort Myers, all 8 victims were found within 50 yards of one another. While some believe this suggests a different hand was at work, others have argued that Conahan's methods may have simply evolved over time. Conahan had a method of sexually assaulting and mutilating victims to cover up those sexual assaults. But since the 8 bodies found were completely skeletal, it was impossible for forensic examiners to confirm the manner of death, let alone any sexual assault, torture, or mutilation which might have occurred pre- or post-mortem. Investigators believe that Conahan had a type, for lack of a better term. There were characteristics shared by his victims which seemed to specifically draw him in, but again, With only 3 of the 8 positively identified, it can't be confirmed if all of the victims shared those particular looks or not. Some similarities have been noted, based upon the 3 victims who have been identified. At the time of his death, Eric Kohler was 21, the same age Montgomery had been when he was killed. During the time the police were investigating Conahan for his crime against Burden, they conducted surveillance, which saw him visiting parks in the Fort Myers area, specifically locations where drifters were known to hang out. When Conahan was later questioned about the Fort Myers 8, he denied any responsibility, but it should be noted that he denies that he ever attacked or killed anyone, even the man he's convicted of having murdered. Conahan is looked at by many as the likely killer, but there are details that raise concerns. This, of course, presents another problem for investigators. If it wasn't Conahan who was responsible for the deaths of the Fort Myers 8, they very well may have had, or perhaps still do have, another serial killer operating in their area. Each of the 5 remaining unidentified men are listed in NamUs and show that each has had more than 10 comparisons tested and ruled out. I should note, though, some of the men have been compared to missing persons disappearing as late as 2005, suggesting the possibility that that 1987 to 2001 window may have been widened, though there doesn't appear to be any official confirmation on that. For more than 13 years, these men's identities have remained undetermined, and any potential link their identities may provide to their killer is hidden. In 2019, investigators enlisted the assistance of Miami-Dade Police Department's forensic artist, Samantha Steinberg, to update the facial reconstructions. It's been hoped that these new, more detailed constructions might aid investigators in identifying the 5 remaining John Does. As of yet, there have been no further identifications. 8 skeletons found in a wooded lot, laid out in a tight circle no more than 50 yards wide. It was a horrifying discovery which has since brought answers to the families of 3 missing men, though 5 remain unknown. While investigators have looked into several different aspects of the case, they've never been able to confirm a direct link to any particular killer. Many believe that Daniel Conahan is the man responsible, and for their part, police have stated that it's a possibility, though they can't expand any further than that. Conahan is, for some, a possibility, while for others it's believed that another killer was at work, perhaps inspired by Conahan or maybe operating independently in the same time frame. Over the years, many locations have become notorious as the dumping grounds for serial killers, from Gilgo Beach on Long Island to the West Mesa of Albuquerque. Here, we have a spot where horrifying crimes were committed and 8 men's lives were taken, and yet this case has never received the coverage it deserves, the coverage which might help identify yet more of the victims. 12 years have passed since the last of the 3 victims was identified, though in recent years we've seen a tremendous uptick in unidentified victims' names being returned to them. Maybe with technology advances, we might still be able to find out the identities of these 5 men. We can only hope that one of those names or something about that person might give investigators a better chance of finding justice for them and their families. Until then, though, the answers to the 5 family mysteries might only be found in Fort Myers. These men were sons, brothers, uncles. Somewhere out there, there's someone still looking for them, and maybe, sooner than later, they can be identified and placed at rest beneath stones showing their true names. Perhaps there is the chance that they might be able to assist in solving their own murders, if only we knew who they were. What do you do to keep your mind sharp? For me, I enjoy the excitement and challenge of trivia, and if you're like me, then you need to play Trivia Star. It's the best way to test yourself. Trivia Star is a free mobile quiz game that's entertaining and challenging. You can choose categories like music, sports, movies, TV, animals, or celebrities. There are over 60 categories to choose from, so there's always more trivia to explore. If you choose the correct answer from multiple choices and beat the clock, you move on to the next level. The questions get harder over time, but if you get stuck, don't worry. You can use coins and gems to get hints and beat the level. And TriviaStar has 2,000 five-star reviews in the Apple Store. Join them today and see if you're smart enough to win. Right now, TriviaStar is offering you 2,500 coins and 500 gems when you download and play. Just go to the Apple or Google Store and search for TriviaStar. Again, search TriviaStar and enjoy 2,500 coins and 500 gems. Download TriviaStar for free today. Taking care of yourself is extremely important, and it doesn't have to be difficult either. With CBD, you can feel better without needing to rearrange your whole life. CBD helps me feel more rested, calm, and my body feels a lot less sore, which is a grateful break of pace at this time in my life. Now, I'm not talking about that gross-tasting juice that you drink out of a weird dropper that's impossible to get an accurate dose from. I'm talking about Caliper, a better way to consume CBD. Unlike CBD oils, Caliper CBD powder is tasteless and blends easily into any food or drink without a nasty aftertaste. That's exactly 20 milligrams in each package, taking all the guesswork away. I add Caliper to my morning coffee, and it's a great way for me to start my day. With Caliper CBD powder, you're clinically proven to absorb 450% more CBD compared to tinctures. That's pretty crazy. And Caliper gives you all the benefits of CBD in just 15 minutes, about twice as fast as CBD oil. Caliper comes in both 10 and 30 count packs, and best of all, you can get started for less than $20. Caliper has a special offer for all Trace Evidence listeners. Get 20% off your first order when you use the promo code TRACE at trycaliper.com/trace. You can try Caliper CBD risk-free for 30 days. If you don't love it, they'll give you a full refund, but you're gonna love it. That's trycaliper.com/trace. Don't forget to use promo code TRACE for 20% off your first order today. Every town has its isolated spaces, its lesser traveled areas, even a major vacation destination. How many of you have a place like that? An area of town that no one really ever goes and no one really lives? An isolated chunk of woods, a barren lot, tight dirt roads you've never actually traveled? What horrifying secrets might be hidden inches or feet beneath the dirt? What mysteries linger whose answers might be at the end of one of those roads, in the midst of one of those fields? When most people think of Fort Myers, they imagine sandy beaches, blue water set against a vast horizon. Yet, down those back roads, far from the center of town, a terrible mystery was discovered, and nearly 14 years later, that mystery remains unsolved. There aren't a ton of theories revolving around this particular case, due in part, I believe, to the lack of coverage it's received. 8 young men vanished, some of them have been reported missing, though for the most part, it seems that a lot of them were drifters, people without a steady home, be it due to unfortunate incidents in their lives, bad choices they made, or broken families. Either way, at some point, they came into contact with a killer in the Fort Myers area who left their bodies in a wooded lot that for years went ignored. It wasn't until developers began looking at the property that the remains were found, and all these years later, only 3 have been identified, and the killer remains unknown. Of the theories that are out there, they tend to break only into 2 particular branches. Either an unknown serial killer was, or possibly still is, operating in Southwest Florida, or these are further crimes committed by Daniel Conahan, who, while facing a death sentence for a single murder, is suspected in more than 5 others. The most likely place to begin is with Conahan himself, before moving out into the possibility that someone else could have been responsible. While Conahan has only been convicted of 1 murder, authorities are fairly certain that he was the man behind the Hog Trail murders. The crimes were all committed in similar ways. The victims were lured into the wooded areas, at which time they were bound, assaulted, in some cases tortured and mutilated, and then killed. We know from the man who escaped, Stanley Burden, that at least in his instance, Conahan offered cash in exchange for illicit photos, photos which involved nudity and bondage, and were to be taken in the woods. Burden survived only due to Conahan's frustration after failing to strangle him. In official court documents, Burden testified that Conahan put a rope around his neck and began strangling him, eventually yelling "die" in frustration. For whatever reason, Conahan gave up, dropped the rope, and walked out of the woods, leaving Burden nude and tied to a tree. Burden apparently escaped only because Conahan had dropped a pair of pliers and he was able to use those to loosen his restraints. The attack on Burden happened in Fort Myers, approximately 1 mile from the 10-acre lot where the Fort Myers Eight were eventually found. Now, for most people, it's very difficult to wrap their heads around the idea that Conahan could have been operating in this area and not himself directly responsible for the eight bodies that were found off Arcadia Street. Given the descriptions of the victims, all males, all between the ages of 18 and 49, they certainly share similarities with the man that Conahan preferred to target. Without identifying all eight, though, it's very difficult to know if they shared all the traits that the killer was typically attracted to. The Hog Trail murders took place north of Fort Myers, between Charlotte and Sarasota counties. While Charlotte County can be reached after a 30-minute drive north, Sarasota's further north, approximately 80 miles away. For the most part, serial killers often operate in the same areas, areas where they feel comfortable, and in a lot of cases that have been solved, their dumping grounds are usually close together. In the Hog Trail murders, you aren't looking at the bodies found right next to one another, but instead spread out. In those cases, while the victims were found nude without clothing or personal effects, their bodies didn't appear to be simply laid on the ground. In some cases, they were posed. In others, the bones were spread out, though it's unknown if this had anything to do with Conahan or perhaps wildlife. We know with the Fort Myers Eight that wildlife certainly was involved with some damage to the bones. In Fort Myers, though, all eight were found close together. Police have suggested that they weren't even buried, but placed on the ground, and over time, storms and changes in weather may have resulted in them becoming partially buried. It seems quite apparent that this particular lot was never visited. No one was trekking through the woods. Now, the argument has been made that maybe since the bodies in the north were found, Conahan could have turned his attention to the south, trying to find a more remote location. Maybe one which had no draw for hunters or hikers, a vacant lot that for the most part went ignored. It's difficult to analyze. While some people believe that serial killers are set in their ways and unlikely to change them, we have seen some examples of killers altering their methodology, and that certainly could have happened here. For as many similarities as there are, you'd think it'd be easy to make the connection, but given the nature of the remains as they were found, physical evidence simply didn't exist. If Conahan had conducted these eight murders as he had the previous ones, it's difficult to find solid evidence of strangulation with skeletal remains, unless, of course, certain bones are broken in the process. Outside of Conahan, there are those who have argued that these crimes surely could have been committed by a yet unknown, or perhaps known but unconnected, serial killer. It's difficult to argue, given the condition of the bodies and their proximity to one another, that the 10-acre lot was certainly the dumping ground for someone, someone who was likely responsible for all eight deaths. That, though, does not confirm beyond a doubt that Conahan had to be the one doing it. Looking at the victims, you've got two men who were certainly transient in Kohler and Tehei. Blivens is a little more difficult to nail down, though it's important to note that on one of his arrest records, he listed his occupation as being a male sex worker. It seems that whoever targeted these men specifically looked for people that no one was going to miss. And I don't mean to be crass by saying that, but the killer clearly focused on people who didn't seem to have firmly established roots in the area, people where it was unlikely anyone was going to be looking for them. To me, that means one of two things. Either the killer was local, or the killer was someone who traveled through the area enough to know where to go to find these types of potential victims. Now, in Conahan's case, he utilized money to lure in his victims. He offered to pay them for photos to be taken in the woods, and once he had his victims tied up, he transformed into the vicious and violent killer that he is. That certainly could have been the same type of method used by another killer, though I have seen some argument that the victims may have been lured into the woods by other means, be it for sexual experiences, drug sales, or something else. However, unlike the Hog Trail murders, we don't exactly know what happened to the Fort Myers 8. We don't have a confirmed method by which they were killed. We don't have the ability to determine if they had been bound, and judging by how much time had passed, trees were certainly less likely to show any signs that they'd been used to bind any victims. No rope or any other kind of restraints were recovered in the lot. Conahan's time of operation, at its peak, seemed to have come throughout the mid-1990s. By 96, he had been arrested. By 99, he was convicted. This makes the times at which the victims were killed extremely important. We know that for the three that have been identified, they vanished in 1995, but we have no idea when it comes to the final five. Police have theorized the crimes could have occurred between 87 and 2001. If any crime was committed after the mid-90s, it's unlikely that Conahan was responsible. If any occurred after 1999, then he couldn't have been responsible. Based on Namus exclusions, we've seen DNA tested against at least one man who disappeared as late as 05. If investigators believe the crimes could have been committed that late, then you're definitely looking for someone else. The fact of the matter is, without further information, it's extremely difficult to determine exactly who may have been responsible. As we know, based on all available evidence, police don't have enough to charge Conahan with the Hog Trail murders, let alone the murders of the Fort Myers 8. What you have is 8 homicide victims and nothing to tie them to anyone. Even the 3 men who have since been identified, Eric Kohler, John C. Blevins, and Jonathan Tehei, have little in common other than the fact that they were living transient lifestyles, had criminal histories, and were at some point in the area of Fort Myers. Unfortunately, while to some degree these men fit the types of people Conahan targeted, they also fit the kind of description that any other serial killer might target. So, is it possible that someone else in the area could have committed these crimes? Certainly. Perhaps that's why there are differences in the way the Fort Myers 8 were found compared to the way Conahan's victims were found. However, it's also entirely possible that Conahan was operating in multiple areas at the same time. It would all depend on his drive, that urge to kill, and how far he'd be willing to go to achieve it. Maybe if he couldn't find someone in the northern area, then he'd take a drive down further south and look around. Surveillance on Conahan showed that he had gone to Fort Myers, that he had visited locations known to be populated with transients, so it's entirely possible that his Fort Myers crimes were more of a secondary choice, maybe not what he wanted exactly, but when he needed it, it was an option. Maybe that's why they weren't posed, maybe that's why it was done in a different way. It was to satisfy an urge, but not the fantasy that he truly had. Maybe someone completely separate from Conahan was responsible. Maybe if the remaining 5 victims' identities are discovered, we might finally have some kind of link. Right now, it all comes down to that, identification. In most of the cases I cover, we have a general idea of what happened. We know who the victims were, or we have an idea of who the killer or abductor was. Here, we have so little. We have 3 names and 5 unknown identities. That's what makes this case so different from others. While there's suspicion of who could be responsible, the only way to make a solid connection may be to determine the identification of all 8 victims. This becomes a case where the mystery of the victims is nearly as perplexing, if not more perplexing, than the mystery of the killer. Police have been working this case for nearly 14 years, and while they've received hundreds of tips over that time, they've only successfully identified 3 of the victims. The remaining 5 must have someone out there who knows they're missing, someone who is wondering what became of them. We've seen a lot of progress in terms of identifying does. Parabon Labs certainly has the ability to construct far more extensive and accurate depictions of victims based on their DNA. Maybe, sooner than later, we'll get another identification, and that could snowball into more. Unfortunately, though, without those identifications, someone coming forward with further information or something conclusive to link someone to the Fort Myers 8, this case will remain open and unsolved, but it hasn't quite gotten very cold yet. If you're looking for more information about the Fort Myers 8, there are some news articles discussing this case, though not as many as you may hope. Daniel Conahan, on the other hand, has been covered extensively in newspaper articles, as well as there being several television specials and documentaries. If you have any information about the murders of the Fort Myers 8, please contact the District 21 Medical Examiner's Office at 239-533-6339 or the Fort Myers Police Department at 239-339-4008. What do you believe happened? Tweet me at TraceEvPod, email me at TraceEvidencePod@gmail.com, message me on Instagram at TraceEvidencePod, or comment in the Facebook group. I wanted to take a moment here to just thank all of you for your well wishes, the emails, and the messages that you've been sending me over the past week. As some of you might be aware, I had a medical situation late last week, which is still affecting me today and caused this episode to be delayed by a day. But I am on the road to recovery, and I just really wanted to say I appreciate all of your thoughts and concerns, and it means the world to me to know that you care that I'm doing all right. I'd like to take a moment now to thank our amazing Patreon producers: Alicia Lorraine, Aurora K, Brittany Bivens, Brian Kemmerling, Christine Greco, Krista Colvin, D'Earthy, Diane Dyson, Eamon Brady, Guillerme Pinto, James, Jason Yeager, Jennifer Winkler, Joanne Berkowitz, Kate Much, Megan Cotter, Michael Graves, Nick Mohar Schurz, Pamela Coburn, Quinn McBreen, Roberta Jansen, Sarah Mascaratolo, Tara Doble, Travis Skepko, Stephanie Joyner, Stephanie Eve, Tom Archer, and Tracy Woods. You're all amazing, and your contributions are greatly appreciated, as are all patrons. If you're interested in supporting Trace Evidence, please visit patreon.com/traceevidence or visit trace-evidence.com for further information. I want to thank you all for taking the time to listen, and I hope you'll join me next week for another unsolved case on the next episode of Trace Evidence.